Warmest greetings to anyone listening to this recording. You're in for a treat. I'm Rob Christie. I've been involved in the growth and transformation movement, I guess you'd call it, for decades. During that time, I've had the privilege of working with a lot of great teachers. And I'm with one of them this morning. His name is Jim Hamilton, author of 5 books, a close friend, and more importantly, the inventor of several technologies which have proven to be helpful to anyone who is seriously committed to making meaningful change in his or her life. In the growth and transformation movement, I have found that my fellow voyagers frequently make an error in judgment around this issue. And that is the notion that it is always somehow better to be passive or to not assert oneself, or to not make choices in a timely manner. A lot of Jim's recent work has been around the idea of choice points that we encounter in our lives. Jim, would you put some more flesh on those bones for our audience?
Hey Rob, great to see you this morning. Great to spend some time and great to have the opportunity to let people listen in on our thoughts. Choice points is a term that I've come up with in the last 5-6 weeks in our conversations. And I was kind of using it, having not really thought about it, because it just showed up on its own. And as I've kind of delved into it, I've come to understand that choice points are choices that we make for which then we go on in our lives. And in fact, what we're going to try to demonstrate this morning is the idea that choice points are something, it's like a nodal point on a map. We're going through our lives, we make choice points, and then we allow. And I'll get an example would be a number of months ago, I was sure, and I was really committed and putting things in place to move to Panama, the country of Panama. There's a gentleman down there I'd known for about 10 years. We have similarities in some of our interests. And I went quite a ways. I got all the way down to, I was going to buy a cargo box, shipping container. I compared prices on moving my car to Panama from Houston and from Long Beach, and the different ports you would come in. The north, it wouldn't be the north. I think it's a, I don't know if the Panama Canal runs east and west or north or south, but Colón is the Atlantic side. I think Panama City is the Pacific side. I'm not sure about that. And then one day I decided that I didn't really want to work with this guy. And our 2 or 3 months of conversation, which I was allowing, I was building. And then one day I changed my mind, which became a new choice point. And not to say that I then jumped to St. Thomas, but I had an invitation from a client to come be in his house. And he offered me 2 rooms. He said he's above the mosquito line, which is a new term, because he was almost 1,000 feet above the water, above the ocean. And I considered that, and I allowed that, and I explored that idea. And one of the conclusions I came to was the Atlantic time zone is too far away from Pacific time zone. That's 4 time zones. That's a lot of adjustment for being on the phone with people and this and that. The point is that choice points are decisions that we make for which we then follow through, for which allowing is a huge component. And I'd like to hold off on the allowing a little bit and continue to delve into the choice point concept. But I think there's a whole understanding around allowing that I hope we get to explore in this conversation. But choice points is, I want to go into that a little bit more. Maybe you have some thoughts.
I do. Two things. One is, let me get both of them out, and then I want to hear your response. How do you know that you're at one of those points in your life where making a choice shows up as being important? That's question number one. Question number two, in my time on the planet, what I've observed is that, change is challenging. And it's something that oftentimes people resist. It's easier to stay with the status quo, what's known, et cetera, than it is to venture off in some new direction. So, how do you get past that?
Well, those are good. The first thing is a choice is not set in stone. It's not like you're stuck with your choice. In fact, choices are ever evolving. And as you make higher quality choices, the choices last longer. So if you're not used to making choices and you don't understand law of attraction and all these kinds of things, making a choice could be, maybe that's what people try to do. Maybe it's what you're talking about. They think they make a choice and it's for the rest of their life, and it's not. Choices are something that you continue to refine. So there's a whole art and science to choices. And I do believe people get paralyzed in the idea they have to make a choice about whether they're going to marry this guy or marry this woman or what school they're going to go to. And actually, all of that better comes to us through flow and small choices or choice points. Ultimately, the science of choice points, and I actually have trademarked the term, it's fun letting stuff come rolling in, but choice points should always be toward more coherence. Choice points should always be away from dissonance. And a lot of us have things in our lives that we hold on to because we made choices a while ago and we still have those choices, even though they're dissonant, or we have choice points to support something, even though it's dissonant. And I believe as we make better choice points, we will learn to let dissonant things go and choose toward more coherence. And in letting things go that are dissonant, that take up place in our lives, we leave more opening for new things to show up. And we can actually make choice points in small gradients, and you watch how your choices go. One of the concepts is when you make a choice, especially a big choice, like let's say you've got two businesses you want to start, you play with them and you look to see which one the universe supports. They both might be great ideas, but the universe only supports one of them. And then your choice point takes you off in that direction. Maybe that's a start.
Well, I think it is, and certainly speaks significantly to the issue I raised about fear and hesitation. Just the realization that a choice isn't forever, that it's something that's evolving, in your life. So that's good. Good for the audience to hear. Share a bit with us. You used the word coherence a couple of times. I'd like our audience to hear what you mean by that, because I think that's a significant element as somebody goes through the choice point process, the necessity of being aware of moving in that coherent direction.
Just for fun, I was going to say, hey, I never said anything about coherence. I was going to try to start an argument. I was teasing you. I started laughing to myself about being silly. I never said anything about coherence. So coherence, first off, choice points, they actually start out small. You make small choices. I started to say smart choices. You make small choices. You see how they go. You make more small choices. But ultimately, we want coherence in our life because coherence is order. You might say coherence and the frequency of God are the same thing, or coherence is as close as we'll ever get to understanding the frequency of God. And so, in learning to define choice points, one of the things I watched with myself is making choices that are aligned with more coherence. In other words, there's an analogy, there's a group that I've been involved with, and as I've gotten more involved with them, I've decided that they're really not that organized. I had high hopes. I participated, and it really kind of devolved. It couldn't hold itself together, and it kind of devolved. And so I started making choices away from that organization. And so choice points can be about simply dropping something that otherwise maybe you were incubating and it really doesn't have the feet to pick up on its own and your support isn't enough. And you can languish with it or you can drop it. And so, choice points in that particular analogy, you're choosing something that you can see is dissonant. And a lot of people will hold on to stuff like that, hoping or thinking or not being aware of the fact that they can choose toward coherence. And when we have our life filled with half-baked ideas or organizations, or in fact, I dropped out of my Matthew McConaughey stuff. I found that not to be anywhere near as coherent as I thought. In fact, I just got my money back just today, I think. I joined that group. I had really high hopes. I thought, Austin is coming. That group that he's attracted is really powerful. And as I got into it, I went, I backed out of it by 30 days, got my money back. And it's over. And so there's two analogies of things that I made choices for that didn't fulfill their potential, and I dropped them because I would rather not have my field, my existence filled with things that are limping or not running well. And while people think, oh, you need to help the people that can't help themselves, you need to think about that twice. Because what we and that, and there's always people that will help people. There's always that. And so the ones that as we get a little more coherent individually, we start making choices toward coherence. And what coherence is more order. And when you see organizations, and while you might have high hopes, if they're not able to pull it off and you can't go in there and be a he-man or a he-woman and straighten the whole thing out, it's really better to quietly withdraw your energy and go find places to plug in that are more serving of your energy and more conducive to what serves you and your ability to serve them. And again, the big point is to drop stuff that doesn't work. And the sooner you drop it, the sooner you make a choice point away from it, the better off you are. And we've got to learn how to be individual and leaders instead of just going along. A lot of people go along with whatever's going on.
When you're involved with a choice point and the associated process, what is it you advise people to pay attention to? Is it the thoughts that come up, the feelings, some of both? What shows up in external reality? What is it what is it you're paying attention to as you go through this process?
So all of that. Now I'll give you an example. So an analogy, I even remarked about Matthew McConaughey and his program. What is it called? The Art of Living, LIVIN apostrophe. I like Matthew McConaughey as an actor. I like him a lot. Most recently, I saw the movie Mud, or saw it again. But when I started, I with his 2 hour, actually it was a 4 hour presentation that I saw in an article that remarked about, oh, it turned into he's selling something and this and that. He had 2 and a quarter million people on that 4 hour video. 200, that's a lot of people. And so the resonance was high initially. And as I stuck with it, it started dropping. The resonance, the sense of camaraderie with it, the sense of excitement of it. And this is kind of an extreme example. And I think it was the second week, this guy Dean, who's part of Mastermind, which is Tony Robbins, he went on a rant about a number of people didn't show up for his second week. And I got off after 35 minutes. So there's an example. You make a choice that feels good, and you, what that choice point needs to do is continue to feel good or feel better. So you're moving uphill, you're moving into a more refined experience based on a choice point, or the experience of that choice point and the initial resonance of it drifts away. Now, I'm not saying that well, so that's really kind of the point. So choice points are, you can, when you make a choice point, there's always a feeling associated with it. If nothing else, the feeling of a choice point dropping something that is no longer feeding you, you can tell that you know that's the right thing to do. You feel in your gut, it's called knowingness. That might be an example, or relief. Dropping something that you hope would work, and you maybe you stuck with it too long. But there's, as you make choice points and they're in the right direction, like I have something going on that is, and partly dropping things that don't work. I've got some of my new work is going bonkers right now, and all it's doing is climbing. And you see, you have to let go of things that aren't climbing. And the more things you let go of that are dissonant, that are in your field, the more room for other things to grow. And I've got a project, the financial component of it is huge. The quality of the people I'm being introduced to is huge. In fact, it's bigger than I ever would have thought. And part of it's a product of dropping things that don't fulfill me, because, for example, the Matthew McConaughey project, which is called Road Trips, something about road trips, and I like him a lot. And I thought that was going to introduce me to a great community. I thought it would tie me into Austin. One of the guys is out of Phoenix. So I held that energetic. And as it kind of soured, I let it go. And here I've got something, I only realize it right this moment as we're talking about it. I got something huge that is taking off. I'll give you an example. I was introduced to a new potential client. I think we talked last Friday for the first time. I had to be at the airport in Phoenix Saturday at 2 o'clock. It turned out he had to, and I said, we need to get together. And it turned out I had to be at the Phoenix, he's out of Phoenix. He had to be I had to be at the airport at 2:40 to pick somebody up. He had a flight out at noon. We both ended up, so we both showed up at the Phoenix airport early and spent an hour and a half and a very, very, very powerful conversation. So as we make choices that work, we will find new synchronicity, harmony, and order shows up with those choices. So as you become more coherent, you start finding more order in your choices. It's a very, your whole life can be like that. And we start with little points. You know, a lot of people get frozen in the idea, I got to decide what college I'm going to go to, or if I'm going to be a dentist or a doctor or whatever. And all of that's all made by little tiny choices that feel good, and the next one adds to it. And here I am suddenly. So it all gets better if you allow it to get better, and especially if you move away from choice points or dissonance.
Listening, a couple more things are coming up for me. I remember decades ago when I was practicing Kashmiri Shaivite yoga, my guru said, your friends at one stage of your incarnation are not necessarily going to be your friends at a subsequent stage. And switching to kind of a different angle on the same idea, I've got a couple of coaches. Both have been at it for decades. And one of them shared with me that she takes on very, very few new clients. And it's not that she doesn't have the opportunity to take on even more if she chose to do so. It's that what she finds is that only a small percentage of the people who show up are coachable. And let's define that as willing to move in the direction of coherence and away from the direction of dissonance. Any comments, sir?
Well, I think the idea that you can easily outgrow your friends or your relationships is very powerful, because a lot of people, you know, I know a lot of people that don't get much bigger than their family. There was a, not that many generations ago, family is what you had, and that was it. And they needed sons and daughters and this and that to run the farm and whatever. And I know people that that are not very outgoing, and their family is the most important thing there is. And for a matter of a few choices and insights, and I'm not making family wrong, that's not my point, but you've already got family. The question is, how do you extend your life into new opportunities, new excitement, new adventure, new journeys, new everything? If but we don't let go of what we have. So a lot of people, you know, I've actually seen people take things from other people because it's something they couldn't achieve on their own, and so they will take other people's things, and I suppose that's one way to do it. But the idea that your friends are your friends and they may not be your friends later in life is very, very, very true. And frankly, you know, we are whole on our own, and we have lots of acquaintances, and I would hope we would continue to have new acquaintances always, and let people go. And it's not about seeing how many friends you can have. It's about the adventure. It's about understanding new choice points and new adventure and new excitement. And we got to learn how to, that goes back to courage on the map of consciousness. Courage is where it starts.
A big hello to all of our listeners, wherever you may be and whatever your circumstances may be. We have what I hope will be for you a meaningful conversation this morning. I'm Rob Christie. I've been involved in the growth and transformation movement for decades. And during that wonderful journey, I've encountered a number of very powerful teachers. And I'm with one of them this morning. His name is Jim Hamilton. He's my dear friend. He's a published author. And most importantly to you, he's come up with several technologies which have been proven to support anyone who will commit to doing them and has a sincere desire to make some meaningful change in his or her life. Jim and I have been talking a lot about the concept of allowing, what that means, and you know how it fits into a person's life and the business of making choices, for that matter. Jim, take us down that road. You know, what is allowing and why is it important?
You know, Rob, again, a great pleasure to spend time with you. And as I like to say, allow the audience to listen in on our conversations. One of the things that occurs to me, and I'll call this secondhand knowledge. In Fairfield, Iowa, where Maharishi University is and was, and there's a lot of students who meditated hours a day. And somehow, and I'm not saying this is what the school taught, but through meditating hours and hours and hours a day, they thought they were going to get there. They thought that they were going to achieve some kind of consciousness. And of course, all the stories of the past thousands of years of people living in caves, you know, gurus living in caves and meditating for 24 hours or 23 hours a day and on and on. But the story that I heard from somebody that lived in Fairfield was a lot of these students, in meditating so much, they became ungrounded. They thought meditation was what they needed, and they meditated and they meditated and they meditated, and they kind of got out of sight and out of sync with being on the planet. And so with this gentleman who I worked with for a while, this has probably been 4, 5, 6 years ago, suggested that, or as I came to conclude, that meditation alone isn't the answer. And while I have coming up on 50 years meditation background, I always tied meditation with affirmations. In other words, I had a very active, dynamic life of driving for what I wanted, which became my 40-foot sailboat. You know, I put the deposit on it when I was still 25, no family money, no family education, no nothing. I started out with a book called The Lazy Man's Way to Riches by Joe Carbo and came to understand harnessing the subconscious mind and goal setting. And then I later added meditation when I was 23 and retired at 40 with a 40-foot sailboat, retired at 30 with a 40-foot sailboat. But what happened was I was very dynamically involved in my life, for which meditation played a really important part. And my point is that I think allowing isn't necessarily quite what we think it is. And if we don't have this dynamic component that I now call choice, that I now call choice points, I think we're missing the boat, so to speak. And you don't allow in front of a city bus. Doesn't work. Don't allow in front of a moving city bus. Not a good idea. We'll be a little bit more involved in our lives than that.
I want it to be clear Jim, to the audience that you are in no way diminishing the potential benefits to a person who meditates. What you are instead suggesting is that it is a piece of a larger puzzle. How did meditation support you in being dynamically involved in your life and not simply going off in a cave, as you would say?
Well, so of course you're perfectly right. Meditation is a part of life. It is not life. It is not. There'll always be stories. I have a buddy who is a martial arts expert, blew out his knees, ended up with a healing center on the top of the penthouse floor of the BMW building in Frankfurt, Germany. He said he spent a number of years after blowing out his knees in meditation in a cave somewhere. I assume that's a true story because he's a pretty interesting guy. But I think what meditation in part is about, and in big part is about, is the introduction of you to you. Something you'll never get when you're carousing around with your friends and out cocktailing each other and making sure you can back out of the parking spot and get all the way home without crashing into anything, because that was one of my ego trips a long time ago. But meditation is an introspective journey that we all must take. But I think it's fair to say I would never meditate and just meditate and just meditate. I don't think there's anything good about that. Now, you might be the exception to that, and that's great, but meditation introduced me to me. Meditation gave me that inner quietude that allowed insights and intuition to come to me in a much more useful manner. And what meditation really does is quiet the, what do some people call it, the mind monkey? That's not quite the expression, but the monkey mind.
Monkey mind.
And so it's a part meditation. I would suggest meditation over university, because all you're going to do is, as Jimmy Buffett says, you learn how to get laid in college, and you drink to your heart's content. But and it's 4 years of growing up is really what happens in school, and most people aren't what they go to school for. Few are, I think, and because you're not old enough to know what the hell you want to be when you go to college at 18. And so my point is meditation is a crucial aspect of coming to understand your very nature, because we don't get that. You're not going to get that from school. You're not going to get that from medicine. You're not going to get that from anywhere but the study of yourself, which is an inward journey. And as you do that, actually, the world opens up, because intuitive insight and on and on and on start to become available as we quiet down internally. Actually, our connection with source becomes evident and available and identifiable. And myself, I was big into goal setting when I was young. It was combined. Now, when I meditated, I wasn't doing my goals, I was meditating. But the part of my life was about my goals. A part of my life was about, I actually did self-hypnosis for years. I started self-hypnosis in 76. I remember the little tiny green receipt from learning self-hypnosis, 1976. So I was powering up, learning how to understand, harnessing the subconscious mind and this and that. And meditation ran alongside of that. And that's what these kids at, and I'm not picking on Maharishi International University, any of that, because I don't think any I don't anything Maharishi did was incredible. It's the way some people interpret things, and they go off on a tangent, and that's all great. But we need to find balance in all of this. And the first thing we need to do is learn how to make choice points and feel what those choice points are delivering. And so meditation is the beginning of that process of learning how to quiet down internally. And we have to do that. But you did not at the expense of everything else. Zero on that.
So meditation is one avenue or a part of the process that allows one to know that it's time in one's life to make a choice of some sort. Is that an accurate statement of what you're sharing with us, Jim?
Well, if what I understand what you're saying is making the choice to learn how to meditate, that's a big, to delve within, that's a big choice. And the sooner you make it in your life, the better. There's lots of people that are 50 that finally learn about the concept of meditation, and they have, quote unquote, the misfortune of not having started meditating when they were 20. And of course, the only thing more interesting in all that is being the second generation meditator, where your parents and your family before you meditated. So it comes to you more naturally, and it's included in your life and introduced to your life earlier on with less hubbub. And I did it. I learned how to meditate when I was feeling a lot of angst. I had moved away from a girlfriend who I eventually married and went off and did some other things, and I really kind of strained myself. And I heard commercials, maybe on the radio, extolling the virtues of TM, and showed up with $60 and an apple, got a mantra, and I meditated twice a day for 10 years without fail. And only America's Cup in '83, I took 5 6 months off and then went back to meditating. And it's always been the whole concept of a quieted nervous system. It's essential. So you make that choice. Some people are better at making that choice, and then there's the discipline of actually doing the meditation. Because if you don't actually, I think the discipline of meditation is equal to the meditation itself, frankly.
Meditation is, as I understand what you're sharing with us, is one piece of the puzzle involved in quieting the mind. Are there other pieces or other ways to do it?
Well, of course, my technologies, but that's really kind of, I say, advanced stuff. Core resonance in particular. So what goes on is we all start out in overload. You might even say, I personally don't believe in reincarnation. I believe we come in pure, but we absorb our surroundings, and karma is what we absorb when we come in, whether we show up on a palace or show up in a slum or show up in a middle-class neighborhood with parents who maybe disagree more than they should, or maybe one of them does a little too much drinking. But we absorb that when we're young. And so we start out with a lot of misfit ideas, you might say, just because of this, the human species is generally speaking quite dysfunctional. You'll find some cultures are more orderly, but generally speaking, humans are pretty dysfunctional. And when you come in, you absorb all of that. And so you start out in overload because you start out with a lot of misinformation, dysfunctional information, or dissonant information. You're not taught about plugging into the frequency of God from the get-go. Plants and trees and bumblebees are all taught that from the get-go about their connection with source. Humans are not. So we all end up in overload relatively quickly because the brain attempts to process the world. And when we're plugged into source or God or whatever you want to call it, guidance is naturally there. And so if we don't have access to guidance naturally, again, like the bumblebee and the trees and the plants and the orcas who are crashing into sailboats, I don't know if you've read that. The orcas are fighting back. They're starting to trash sailboats off the Straits of Gibraltar over there. So overload is what increases the human condition. When we're in overload, our ability to take on new information is really limited. Why? Because we're in overload. We can't add more stuff, even if it's good stuff. We're in overload, got too much dissonant information rolling around. Now, core resonance is interesting because I come from a background and not only almost 50 years background in meditation, but now since 2006, 2007, or 2023, so that's 7 or 8 years background in meditation now, for which I've done about 400 sessions. There's not that many people on the planet that have done. And this, I developed my own gear and I retranslated how neurofeedback is done altogether. And I've learned how to quiet the nervous system like meditation, but much more quickly so. And there's no programming in my work. That's called core resonance. And properly, it's designed to be owned and shared by six people. That's what a colony is. I might add that a lifetime of meditation will only achieve so much. And core resonance, again, there's no programming in the work. We let the brain discover itself through the hardware software. We let the brain, in discovering itself, the brain reorganizes itself and the brain quiets down. And the brain, using the technology like a mirror, cleans itself up. And so the efficiency of the brain jumps immensely. Held traumas processed because now the brain has horsepower to process old held trauma and on and on. And as the brain quiets down, which is to say, as the nervous system quiets down, because the brain and the nervous system are all one mechanism, our natural state of connection with source becomes enabled. Because when you quiet the nervous system, which is what we're trying to do or doing with meditation over a period of years and years and years and years, we can do that so much quicker. We can enable our, as we quiet the nervous system, we enable our natural state of connection with source. And so with core resonance, we can do this much more quickly. And in doing so, as this connection becomes enabled, the mind will naturally relent to this connection. Now, the big thing that happens when you do this, as we quiet the nervous system and enable this natural state of connection with source, innate intelligence peaks out of our nervous system or pours out of our nervous system, depending on how much allowing we've come to achieve. And as a meditator or as a colony, six people sharing the ownership of core resonance, we become a portal for innate intelligence expressing through us into this dimension. Because you see, when you move out of the mind, your natural state of connection with source becomes enabled. So it's not really a trick question, but that you asked me. But meditation is a crucial component of coming to learn about yourself and ultimately your connection with source. Because I will say, in my early years of meditating, let's say 4 or 5 years, and maybe 2 or 3 possibly, I began to realize that in meditation, when you move out of your mind, it's like your nervous system. You realize your nervous system is constantly sensing. And so it turns out meditation is the act of learning how to listen with your nervous system, which is a mindless activity. And it's when you become mindless that the whole frequency of God things start to show up, because frankly, mind keeps you from your connection. You learn how to let the mind go, and your connection will become enabled. And then learning how to maintain that is part of the game. But as you move out of the mind, that whole thing opens up. And yes, I have technologies around that, a couple different ones. But ultimately, in quieting the nervous system and meditation, we move toward guidance. And as we move toward guidance, we make better choices. As we make better choices, allowing becomes easier.
If one of our listeners would like to explore core resonance or anything else you've shared this morning with you, how do they go about doing that?
Well, my main website is Core Resonance, CoreResonance, coreresonance.com, which, by the way, the word core is an acronym of acronyms, right? CO is for coherence and RE is for resonance. But so coreresonance.com is my primary website. And you can contact me at carresidence.com/contact. Be happy to talk to anybody by Zoom for 30 minutes and so you can make an appointment. I also have a website that is a subset of Core Resonance, and it's called Visionaries Lab. And Visionaries Lab is kind of my new, I say my new technologies. I kind of went way up in the stratosphere with Core Resonance because Core Resonance can end in ascension. The ascension process is there because you learn how to become partnered with Source and blended with Source, move out of the mind altogether. The scale of the possibility is endless. Let's just put it that way. And that would just be a beginning statement. But in taking this thing so very far, it's all guided work. It's all, I'm blended with Source. I will say that day in and day out. But I've circled back to my original work. And so Visionaries Lab was my original website. And so now I'm offering Soaring Affirmations, Prosperity and Guidance Light. Now, Soaring Affirmations, Prosperity and Guidance Light is a little bit different because we're using the mind as a tool to its best advantage, which is to say, once you come to access presence and understand presence, you realize the mind is actually a poor tool. It's not supposed to be there in the first place. But because we're out of our natural state of connection with Source, out of our actual state of connection with guidance, the mind takes on the function, the ego, the survival mechanism of trying to run this machinery or this organism without its natural state of connection. And so the mind takes on that function. And what I've learned how to do, and it's part and parcel of what I've done, is we can learn how to saturate the mind with a particular type of affirmation, which we've touched on repeatedly in some of our earlier conversations. But the long story short, we can make our affirmation about our connection with Source, and we can saturate the mind with the concept of first and foremost is our connection with Source through a type of, and series of affirmations, which eventually we called Soaring Affirmations. And so we can use the mind to its highest possibility. And that's a relatively inexpensive program, has 100% money back guarantee. It's a great way to build an audience, and I can show people something very, very specific and very interesting that I don't think you're going to find anywhere else on the planet. And that's found at visionarieslab.com, VisionarieslabLab, all one word, .com. You can also find it at coreresonance.com/visionarieslab. And I get into, there's a document called The Trilogy, which explains Core Resonance, Visionaries Lab, and the new 508 communities, which that's a third component. Gets into nonprofits and stuff like that. But I've been writing all this time. I've got 180 articles, 5 books, website is full. I've just moved to this video. You and I moved to this video, which means I can put out new information so much faster, publish it so much faster. We're going to go into the next section, I believe, and talk about how allowing does the heavy lifting. And this is all coming in so fast, and we're documenting it, moving on to what's next. So people can find me at coreresonance.com or visionarieslab.com, and I will talk to anybody for 30 minutes by Zoom. Love to talk to people.
Warmest greetings to anyone listening to this conversation this morning. I believe we've got a real treat for you. I'm Rob Christie. I've been involved in personal growth and transformation for decades. And I've had the good fortune of working with a number of powerful teachers, and I'm with one of them this morning. His name is Jim Hamilton. He's my dear friend. He's the author of five books. And most importantly, he's come up with several technologies which have been proven again and again to support anyone who makes a significant effort to embrace them. One of the important concepts as one goes through life and encounters different experience is the notion of allowing, as contrasted with trying to make something happen. And I'm sure everyone listening's experienced this at some point, probably more than once. There are times in your life when you've got to make a decision, when you've got to make a choice, when you're feeling very strongly that taking some other direction is what there is to do. How does allowing fit into that equation, Jim?
Rob, as always, good to spend some time. I appreciate our conversations. I appreciate your the way you look at it and the way you bring ideas back to me, for which we get to share with others. And so, what comes to mind when you were remarking here is that people having to make big choices, that can be difficult, and usually it's a product of making small choices continuously, seeing the feedback from our choices, making new choices. Because I've said humanity will go right to the edge of oblivion and make a left-hand turn or a right-hand turn, and I don't mean that politically, but at the very last second, we will divert from certain catastrophic possibilities as a species, and it's going to be a product of making choices, seeing the results of our choices, making new choices, seeing the results of those choices, and making new choices again. And the fun part is, here we are in 2023, and we're making choices and seeing the results of our choices faster than we ever did. We're watching the Ukraine war, or whatever that's called, and the part drones play, and we're watching how quickly things are, I don't want to say escalating, how quickly successes are achieved because we're growing so much faster and we're learning so much faster. And all of those are choice points as a species, you might say. And so for people that have to make big decisions without having always been involved in making choices, I can see the difficulty in that. And of course, your gut feeling is the most important factor, but your gut needs to be quiet and available to hear and feel what it identifies for you. Because I don't know if people know it, but the gut has its own nervous system called the enteric nervous system. And actually, that's where knowing is an emotion, or knowing is a feeling. And knowing tells you the difference between right and wrong. Feelings tell you the difference between right and wrong. That's Abraham teachings stuff. That's Abraham says, what you focus on expands. That's true, but there's also a feeling associated with each choice or each chunk of focus, and it can tell you how useful that focus is. So not only can you focus on what you want and focus on what expands you, there's actually a mechanism that tells you the usefulness of that. So when people are making big choices, hopefully they've learned how to quiet their nervous system. They've learned how to read their gut. They've learned how to listen to this inner mechanism that is part of their very nature. And for others, I would say, well, it just occurs to me, sometimes people have to make big choices, and they live with their choices, and they can always still continue to refine the ramifications of their choices. They can always still choose toward more coherence. And sometimes people have to move across the country on short notice, and they have to reestablish their patterns and habits on short notice. And all those patterns and habits are choice points. And we can build anything out of nothing. I moved to LA a number of years ago. I was on a real high after finishing Visionaries Thrive in All Times. I had a bunch of money in my pocket, the second physicist in neurofeedback I had sold for him. And I went to LA and I only picked what I wanted. Oh, to the point of paying, I was paying $2,600 rent compared to $750 in Sedona. And but all I did was make choices that I aligned with, and I had an incredible, I carved out an incredible experience in my time in LA, which was a year, and then I went up to Ojai for another year and a half, which that's when Core Resonance was all developed. So we can, even if we have big choices, there's silver linings in all of them, and better than that, in the infinitesimally small components after that choice has been made, we can always build ourselves uphill by making the small choices after the big one that take us in the right direction. We can't disregard the small choices and the small, what I call choice points. They're never ending. And then you add allowing and you watch how your choice points go. And then you keep refining and refining, refining your choice points, and you keep adding, allowing, and refining your choice points, and moving away from things that are dissonant, moving toward things that are coherent. Big decision could be a very powerful concept for you. Big unexpected decision, because you have all of a sudden everything's new. All of a sudden you're in free territory where all your patterns and habits have been left behind. What a powerful place to be. What a powerful spot. Everything you have has been disrupted. Just the idea of moving across country or having to make a big choice about a job or who knows what. You've left your stuff behind. You've made a new major choice, and you can reestablish so much at that particular point. And of course, I do coaching, so I wouldn't mind trying to pitch myself. That's not my point. But sometimes choice points are big, and sometimes a hand is handy.
Well, as I listen, Jim, the message I'm getting is that being at one of these choice points in your life doesn't have to be intimidating if you have a technology available, or I guess another way to put it is, or a track to run on, or the knowledge of how to proceed. You use the phrase allowing to do the heavy lifting under those circumstances. Say more about that for our listeners.
Well, let me go back. Let me go back to where I was just a second. When our patterns and habits, when our life gets disrupted by a major choice, we then have to reestablish our patterns and habits. And it's in the reestablishment of all those patterns and habits. Those are all choice points, and we can rebuild when we've had a big disruption or had to make a big choice. We can rebuild our life by recognizing that what we're really doing is reestablishing our patterns and habits. And so all of those can all be choice points designed to take us uphill. So initially I was a little mystified about somebody having to make a major choice and that maybe doesn't have a lot of background in allowing and this and that, and I haven't worked up to that. But the fact of the matter is a big choice point gives you an opportunity of a clear field and the ability to reestablish your patterns and habits. Because guess what? Your life and your experiences in life comes from the patterns and habits you establish. Ultimately, my patterns and habits are what I call self-healing, and they continue to refine themselves on their own. What I want is my life to be run by my patterns and habits that I established. So that means all of that is automated, while I have all my resources available for listening to the cosmos and on and on. To go off into allowing, doing the heavy lifting, that's brand new. Today is Wednesday. And I think it was last Friday morning, I wrote a flyer. I'm going to do some talks in California. And I came up with an expression as part of this flyer. All the while, I'll read a little bit more. What are we tracking? The part the cosmos plays in our lives and the part the cosmos plays in the governance of all life on planet Earth as we learn how to blend the two. And then I say, all the while learning about choice points and allowing to do the heavy lifting. So what we're trying to get here in our conversation right now is an understanding of what allowing means and how allowing does all the work. Our job, you might say the rudder, the boat goes through the water and the rudder's back here, and it actually has kind of a small function, but it drives the whole ship. It drives the whole everything. And so choice points are choices we make, and preferably when we make them, we're making them with a sense toward more coherence or moving away from dissonance. And as we learn how to make choice points, we move to allowing. And then what happens is life then goes on, and light and allowing actually does the heavy, allowing actually is the boat and how the boat goes through the water. The choice points are the tiny adjustments in the rudder. And so as we have choice points and allow the life unfolds, and it does it on its own, and all we do is steer it. We don't do the heavy lifting. Right now, and most of us, or lots of us in our lives, we're trying to manually run the whole damn process. We're trying to make the choices and make sure the choices turn out and make sure the choices turn out, and then changing the choices when they, and steering them and steering them and steering them, and by the way, manipulating the daylights out of everybody else. And on and on and on, and controlling this and controlling that, and allowing, when you understand allowing is hands off. Quality choice points and allowing actually does all the delivery. Kind of new. I mean, it's simple and that's what it is, but my interpretation of allowing doing the heavy lifting, it's a very cool, something new in my realm here as I'm trying to learn how to explain it.
I'm reminded of a movie that I saw years ago. The basic dilemma was there's a crew of the good guys in this submarine, and either in order to accomplish their objective, which I forget, it was either to get away or attack, one or the other. But they had to maneuver the submarine through, there's rocks on this side and rocks on this side. And if they didn't go right down the center of that opening, it could, damage the ship, possibly fatally. And I remember, the captain is at the
Was
controls.
that Sean Connery by chance? Was it The
Well,
Hunt for Red
probably.
October?
It's the sort of movie he made.
Yeah.
So the captain's there steering, and he's listening to, one of the crew who is monitoring every nuance of motion. But what that analogy reminds me of is allowing. They weren't trying to force that. They weren't trying to force that sub through the opening. They were using tiny nuances of movement. And what you're sharing with us is that when we reach one of those choice points in our life where we have a significant decision to make, we have to learn how to allowing to do the heavy lifting, and not to assume that we have to make something happen or force something to happen, but rather listening to our inner knowing and make small choices that adjust the process as we go.
That's right. So that's what choice points are. They're the tiny rudder adjustments for which allowing because you've got to make the tiny, you make the choice point and you let the choice point be. You make the choice and you let it be. You don't go in there and adjust it and adjust it and adjust it and adjust it. Maybe you start making better choices, but and you learn that process. I had an analogy I want to use. Let's see. Oh yes, I remember. So living in Sedona for so many years, the car wash is one of the places I used to sell lots of visionaries thrive at all time. I sold more of them there than the bookstores in town. But there was another book in there, and I'd sit there and get my car washed, and sometimes I'd collect my money, whatever, however all that worked. And it was the book was about, it was a Navy SEAL who maybe was a local Sedona person. And because the book was generally, the books in the car wash were generally locals. And what he talked about was as a Navy SEAL or whatever special forces he was in, the incredible intuitive nature that they learned to share among themselves. And in other words, they became nonverbal as they did their little tricks of the trade and snuck around in the bushes. I shouldn't say it like that, but as they did what they did. And my point is, there's a world beyond the mind and the mind's version of what's what. And we need to learn how to tune into that. So choice points, the more refined our choice points are, the less effort we put in, and we want to learn how to make choices and allow the outcomes. And yeah, if it starts to become dissonant, we need to make a new choice point. But like my move into Panama, which I was really serious about. Long Beach is where I was going to ship out of, and where I was going to stage my storage from my U-Haul truck in Sedona to where I was going to stage it, put it in a container. I don't remember. It's probably a, actually, if I went to a 40-foot container, I would look to put my car in the container. So probably a 20 by 20 container. But as that went along, it finally faded out as the excitement of it changed because some of the things on the other end of the trip started to change. I really ultimately became clear I didn't want to be with this. I didn't want to work with this guy, ultimately. But I could see my excitement and it drove for a while and then it became dissonant and made a new choice point. And but that happened over a couple of months. So because it was exciting and I liked all the shopping for shipping and whether I was going to move the car from Houston or Long Beach. I think it ended up Long Beach, but of course it didn't happen. So the fun part is, as we learn how to listen to our internal mechanism, and meditation is generally the entry point to that of quieting the mind and learning how to listen, we make choices at a more subtle, in a more subtle manner. We allow our choices in a more subtle manner, and life then runs on its own, which is what the heavy lifting part is. So I think of an example of somebody that's trying to run an operation, and all she's doing is getting herself deeper in doing a poor job. And she hasn't got the sense to just, actually, I'll tell you what, when you have momentum running in a direction, it's not serving you, you don't really try to fix it. What you do is your first thing is you just come to a dead stop. You don't make any choices until the momentum of the wrong direction settles. You don't immediately try to steer into a new direction. You have something that's not going well. Let the momentum, the patterns and habits of it, let them come to a stop. And once you get internally quiet, then go for a choice point. That makes sense.
I remember 26 years ago, I had a weightlifting partner. We both weighed exactly 152 pounds. However, our capacity was vastly different. David was in the Guinness World Book of Records because he had once squatted over three times his body weight. So imagine a 152-pound man with 450 pounds on his back, squatting. We worked out 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Monday was back and biceps. Wednesday was chest and triceps. Friday was legs. Every day was abs. And the good news was I could do David's workout, not with his weights. We'd have to take, a number of plates off the bar, but I could do the workout. And I got a lot of good advice from David. This dude was an expert on the human body and how to train it. And I remember one day he said to me, "If it doesn't feel good, don't do it." And how often do we ignore that simple advice as we encounter a choice point in our lives?
That's exactly right. So resonance tells us about everything we need to do or not do. And if something feels dumb or feels, now, risk and adventure are interesting and maybe a little bit different, but if it doesn't feel good, don't do it. If you don't have that sense of accomplishment or that sense of knowing, just going nilly-willy risking and just throwing it all out there, I don't think that's a very good idea at all. So your
Or
gut will
forcing
tell you.
yourself to do something that on some level you know is not the right choice.
Right. I like the idea that allowing does heavy lifting. They're so kind of counter to each other because allowing means allowing and heavy lifting means, but you see, how do our realities show up? They show up based on our focus. And by the way, reaction is focus. A lot of people react to life and they wonder why they got what they got in their lives, but they're reacting to life and reacting is focus, even though the messaging that goes with reaction is usually anything from terror to anger to who knows what. And then you got all the more allowing you have to do because you got to allow your way out of all of that to get back to neutral. But allowing is probably one of the biggest secrets there is because allowing delivers you what you cannot get on your own. Because allowing, you're plugged into consciousness, you're plugged into innate intelligence, source, whatever you want to call it. And you're allowing, see, I call it, part of my work's about becoming blended with source. The more blended with source you are, the less mind you are, the less mind you have. And the more blended with source, the more allowing, because allowing is how you get to become blended with source. In fact, consciousness and resistance are inverse. So as you move away from resistance and rigidity, you automatically move to allowing. And as you move to more allowing and even more allowing, which eventually becomes a mindless thing, become more blended with source. And the more blended with source, the more the possibilities are so much bigger than what you could ever achieve on your own.